Good day and welcome to the Victory Lane podcast, where our guest today is Cindy Lux. Hello.
Hi there. I think we did it.
I was reading a little bit about Lux Performance, and there's a lot of technology that runs through your doors there.
Yeah, stuff that's over my head, that's for damn sure. So I just surround myself with smarter people than myself.
Your husband is the technology partner. Is that how that works?
He's the wizard. Yeah, he's truly the wizard behind the curtain, as we say back in the Wizard of Oz days. But yeah, he's made my life as a driver so easy, but he's the one that he's always been a fabricator by trade, but he's, you know, back in high school, you know, he got bored with high school or grade school. He tested borderline genius, you know, and is one of those guys that just, yeah, loves to try new things and stuff like that. So that's what made, to be honest with you, our relationship with Dodge flourish so quickly. Was the standpoint they would legitimately, we'd be out to dinner or having doing some testing at the track, and they would draw something on a cocktail napkin, and within 3 days, you know, back at the shop, he'd have that part made and sent back to Detroit, you know. And so he's just very, very old school on certain things, and so it makes it very nice.
I would imagine, absolutely. I mean, in many ways, racing is indeed a fairly old school enterprise. You have to get hands on. And
yeah, I mean, it's got to have a balance of both worlds, you know. And unfortunately, I think right now the world is teetering more towards the electronic / bolt on parts / you know, telemetry, this, that. You know, and if I had a crystal ball, I'd, you know, probably say in the next 10 years, it's going to be the folks that know how to use an English wheel, you know, or the folks that really know how to fabricate certain things, you know, other than just buying them off the shelf. So that's, anyway, we see that a lot right now and are just trying to hire people. They're book savvy, they're book smart, you know, they program great, but sometimes you need to kind of get your hands dirty a little bit and kind of build parts and stuff. And they're always eager to learn, don't get me wrong, but it's just a, you know, different part of the world right now.
You have a heck of a resume.
Yeah, been very, very fortunate. I really have, you know, to drive some wonderful race cars and do some testing for a lot of people and, you know, just constantly learning, you know, and I'm very fortunate to grow up in a family of racing. But the interesting aspect, to be honest with you, was I was the youngest and the only girl, and I was never allowed to go to the racetrack. You know, I was always stayed home with the babysitter because, you know, at that time, girls weren't really... Man, I wasn't necessarily even girls, but even kids weren't even really allowed to the racetrack. And so, so it really was, you know, when I graduated from college and I just knew I wanted to try something different and do the deal and just kind of borrowed a car from my dad's dealership without telling him one day and did the driving school, you know. And anyway, yeah, it kind of goes downhill from there. But no, we're very, very fortunate. We really are.
So you started racing right out of college? Is that what?
I did. You know, during high school or college and stuff, I was very active showing horses, believe it or not. Did that for, geez, almost 18 years and a fairly highly competitive level too. Showed all across the country and did all that stuff. And so, but I was very, growing up, again, with all older brothers, I think that what taught me my competitive edge, you know. It's just like we lived on a ranch and we went out and dirt bike riding, and if you couldn't keep up with the big brothers, then you couldn't come, you know. And there's, you know, little, I don't want to say remorse, but this, if you can't keep up, then you're staying home with mom. And so you learn at a young age. So I'm like, I had my little mini bike wheeling, you know, I mean, out of control trying to keep up with the big kids. And so I think that really just taught me that, you know, you just had to learn how to do things, just not talk about it, but learn how to do it. And so but yeah, I grew up on a farm, grew up, you know, like I said, just doing all sorts of horse showing across the country, very active, you know, with the family farm out there and stuff, but just super active. I did a lot of downhill skiing, did, you know, I was in martial arts for 15 years. So it's always the competitive nature. So really when, you know, I kind of wanted to dip my toe in the automotive side, it was just another, you know, new experience. It was another thing to try and stuff. And so, I just kind of after graduated from college and did the driving school. And then I moved down to Los Angeles and went to work for Toyota Motor Sales down there in Torrance, when it was down there in Torrance, I should say, before it moved. And I worked at the corporate headquarters for about 10 years. And just one day, it's kind of went out to the Toyota Grand Prix and sat there and drooled, and within probably 2 days I went out and bought a race car and living in an apartment. I had no place to keep it. I had no tools. I had nothing. It was probably the stupidest purchase of my entire life, but probably the best at the same time. But legitimately, I lived in Palos Verdes and I had no place to keep this car. And when you work at headquarters there was a technical center, and I became friends with one of the techs there in a technical center at Toyota, and we found a corner of the technical center there and we put a car cover on it, and that's where this Dodge Shelby Charger was parked in the Toyota technical center in the corner with a cover on it. We'd work on it at night and take it out on weekends to race.
Mm. So you have been a Mopar person. Not a Mopar guy, but a Mopar person since the very beginning, huh?
Yeah, but not by choice, really. I did the Shelby for the first couple of years, mm-hmm. and then kind of morphed into some BMW stuff and went from there to Corvettes and went there from Porsches. And it, you know, I'm not brand specific at all. And it's funny how, you know, just kind of coming full circle. But I'd probably say the majority of my career really was Corvettes and Porsches and stuff. And it wasn't until 2008 that at that point, I just put a cold call actually into Chrysler and SRT at the time, and said, this is a program I want to do and I'm going to manage. I'm going to have these folks. And within probably 3 weeks, we met at SEMA and inked the deal very quickly. So, it was kind of sometimes cold calls do work, you know?
Especially if the person projects credibility and success on the other end of the phone. You know,
either that or they just, I don't know. They're like, she's bugging the crap out of me. I'm going to meet with her to get rid of her, you know, whatever it may be.
Oh my gosh. So what year, that was 2008, you're saying. So
the first time we sat down with them was, I think, 2007 or 8. And then we got hooked up and started running the Vipers in club level for a while. And that was when the manufacturer wars were pretty high, let's just say, in club racing, when we competed against the Corvettes and some of the Mustangs. And there was quite a bit of money spent by the factory on our quote-unquote showroom stock cars at that era. So, I would love to. I don't know how long the gag order has to be on me, but I look forward to the day that I can talk about that a little bit more. But I think there was more R&D put into our cars than some of our World Challenger SRO cars that we did for them and stuff later on in the years. But, you know, again, it turns into the battle of the manufacturers. And so it was good to be a part of that in many ways, because it really solidified and really, you know, taught me as a driver and a team owner what it takes to keep and also flourish that relationship with the manufacturer, you know. And, you know, that's one of the things I am very grateful coming up in the family. Actually, kind of reverting back for a second, my family was heavily involved in the motorsports, but again, being the girl and the youngest, I was never really taught anything, nor would my father ever stroke a check. He would never help me financially in my racing career. He says, if you ever needed to groceries on the table or your, you know, electric bill paid or something important in life, I'll be there. But racing is not a necessity. And if you're going to do it, you're going to learn how to figure out the financial aspect and go get sponsors. Now, at the time, I was pretty disappointed in that because I saw a lot of other folks out there in the world that, you know, had that luxury as the folks, you know, their parents kind of helping them out a little bit. And I didn't understand at the time why I was kind of not getting that same opportunity, you know. But I'm telling you now, I'm so grateful. You know, it was a blessing. That was probably the biggest gift my dad gave me was, you know, the school of hard knocks. And he made me kind of go and learn the business side of racing, you know, go out there and make the deals and find the sponsorship and so forth. And so we laugh about it now. My father's still around and comes to our races and stuff. He's 92 years old. And we laugh to this day. You know, I said, you know, Dad, you're really the real reason I'm here. And he kind of looks and giggles and stuff. And he says, well, now just because your name is the same person or same as, you know, on the side of the dealerships, because we had a fair amount of family dealerships. And he says, you get no special treatment. I'm like, yes, sir. So very blessed in that regards.
So 2008, and you're in the Viper, and obviously whatever is right or wrong about the Viper, you stuck with it, because looking at this, last year you had a pretty good season. I've never driven a Viper. I've stood next to one in a parking lot. Of course, the internet reputation is that it's a very difficult car to drive fast. What's it like?
You know, that was true at one point. Okay. Back in I'd probably say in the years of 2005, maybe 2004 in there, kind of the Gen 2 or Gen 3, but the newer model ones coming out, you know, back pretty much in 2010, they really turned a corner and the car is so well balanced, you know, and, you know, people don't realize, they think, you know, a big heavy, you know, 10 cylinder in the front and stuff. We still have 50-50 weight distribution in the car, you know, the way that everything's just constructed. So to be honest, it's really not, you know, a difficult car to drive once you kind of get the, you know, the setup and stuff like that. But we've morphed these cars. We know them very well, but the neat thing about it is, I guess, what we really love about the car is that we keep learning. We keep trying new things, you know, and we keep thinking outside the box. And that's what really, since we shifted over to Trans Am, the rules are a little bit more liberal in our class. And yeah, so there's quite a bit of more things we've actually done to these cars than even the factory at this point is very intrigued by some of the stuff that we're doing. And, you know, it's just, you know, to answer your question, they're not difficult to drive. You know, it's, you know, it's probably the only car. Well, I do know it's the only car in this class that I don't have any traction control on the car. I think I'm the only person in the class in Trans Am that still has a manual gearbox. Everybody else has paddle shifts or just a, you know, standalone sequential with a lever system. And so, yeah, I just kind of play that to my advantage too. Sometimes, you know, kind of an older car with the H pattern box is still kicking their ass, you know. But you and I both know you got to be there at the finish. And that's one of the nice things about the Vipers, the reliability too, that you're not stringing its neck out, you know, and winding that rubber band so tight and stuff. And so it's just the good old fashioned tractor motor that makes a ton of torque and a ton of horsepower. But, you know, it's funny, even now with the restrictor we have to run on our cars, I got to run a 55 millimeter restrictor, which is kind of just get your little tool out there, and you know, it's pretty dang small. And the benefit actually generates, we're the most heaviest car in class, but more importantly, we probably the biggest asset of our car is the brakes. The way that, you know, again, this car stops on a dime. I can take a Porsche in and still outbrake most of the Porsches in my class, which makes their head spin because it just doesn't make any sense, you know. But anyway, but you just, you know, you get the good package. We run the same brakes as an Audi R8 on our cars, you know, so there's a lot of braking potential. You know, it overshadows the tires, the Pirelli slicks on the deal. But anyway, but yeah, it's, you know, the cars are morphed, you know, just to a golden piece. And again, this is where it comes with the relationship with Fred and all the guys on the team. They truly, and I say this, you know, any idiot can get behind the wheel of these cars and perform as well. I really believe that these guys make it so easy for us to go out there and run that hour and a half race.
Yeah. So the only thing I have to say in response to that is you're very modest. I watched some in-car footage from your last event at Road America, which looked to me more like a powerboat race than a motor car race. And I watched you go around turn one, up past turn two, of course, which is, we're looking for the turn. And this Corvette goes off into the weeds on one side, and there's more spray than air, you know. So obviously, there's a bit of driver skill, but it was good.
Yeah, we tried. Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
Sometimes that dog will get a bone, you know. But yeah, well, that's one of the nice things being on the West Coast. I should say from the Northwest, too. You know,
the art of racing in the rain.
My race, yep, it really is. And then when I see the rain clouds come, I don't get nervous and uptight, and people start, you know, puckering up certain areas of their body. I'm like, bring it. This is awesome. You know, this is great.
I really like the fact that the podium shots, you could see that they're handing out the trophies in a rainstorm. That's pretty epic.
That. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is.
We don't want to underplay this. You're a very good driver. Tell us a little bit about Lux Performance, what you guys do. You do car prep. You also do driver coaching, right?
No, for sure. Lux Performance really is kind of 50%, I should say 50, I'd probably say 60% motorsports, you know, and that includes car builds, whether it's current car builds, vintage builds, tune-ups, tweaks, updates, backdates, you know, restoration or whatever may be, very busy on that. And then the other probably 40% of our business really is the specialty fabrication. That includes, you know, robotic work for the government. It includes any type of specialty fabrication, whether it be for cars, boats, manufacturing, shows, cutaways, you know, for auto shows, whatever it may be. It's kind of the place where people bring us stuff that they don't know where to go, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And this is where the creativity of my husband, of being the old school enough, but he just, you know, this is a guy that, you know, his biggest joy one week is he, you know, built just, he just likes to, I don't want to say tinker, but you know, his joy is electronics. His joys are building robots, you know, and the fun thing for him is he builds robots for that show BattleBots, you know, on television and stuff. And so we're very diverse, even though we're primarily known for the motorsports. We do have another side of the business that really is just a custom house fabrication and or build quality and stuff. And so, but then the motorsports side, he is the Fred and all the guys, but Fred oversees all the technical things of the business. And that's pretty much, I don't want to say it, but then I kind of got the reins for everything else. That includes, you know, the business side, client side, the training side, the vendor, you know, all of the sponsorship, so forth, you know, the negotiations with the series, logistics, you know, you name it, and so forth. And so keeps me busy. And I do this for not only, you know, our team, but I've been heavily involved with some other teams as well to kind of help them out a little bit on the back house, on the business side. I do a lot of, in fact, I just got done helping a 13-year-old driver from Seattle put together a PowerPoint presentation for sponsorship, you know, and just little things like that. I really do like to give back to the younger generation or the folks that really want to do this. So I'm kind of a jack of all trades when it comes to the business side, you know, that's the part that's definitely enjoyable, that I do like that and stuff. For me, the easiest part is getting in the race car. That's probably the most peaceful time that I have, because I'm actually strapped into the car. Once I hop out and either coaching 100%, you know, or doing the team deal, or, you know, just taking care of all of our staff and so forth. And so, but I love it. You know, it's been that way forever, but we're just a small company here in Portland, Oregon. You know, we've been in business. This is our 35th year. And we're not a huge company, nor do we want to be. We're not necessarily a boutique company, but we're just, you know, and the nice thing about it for us is that we don't like to have a lot of clients. Like, we don't go to the racetrack with 10 to 12 cars. Our thing is really try to keep it a little bit more manageable, you know, a little bit more personal, a little bit more tailored. So we like to keep our clientele, you know, because we do not just haul their race cars, take it to the tracks, you know, do the coaching, you know, everything, the prep in between. But, you know, most of my clients that I coach, we run a 5-year plan. And that includes not only driving, we do sim, we do physical workouts, we do mental coaching, breathing. I mean, just the whole thing. And I don't just do one-off track days, you know, coaching anymore. I try to take it a little bit more in depth and further. And so I've been doing that for about the last 5 or 6 years. And that seems to be more, not only rewarding, but a lot more enjoyable for both, you know, the clients and myself and so forth.
I would think that the kind of skills that you're talking about are not really, they're not retail. You can't go and spend 4 hours and pick up a skill set, right? Do you mentor outside of Trans Am? I mean, do you have people running in other series or in vintage?
I do. Yeah, no, I do. I mean, I do a lot of SVRA coaching. It's just, if it has four wheels, you know, I mean, I'm from Spec Miata to SRO, you know, it's just like this weekend, you know, SRO is running at, where are they running at? I should know this and I don't. Actually Road America. And I've got a couple clients and I'll be doing some, once they get on track tomorrow, they'll be sending me their data and their video files, and I'll be working on that, you know, and within a couple of hours, I call them back and I give them a list of things to work on. So I do a lot of remote coaching, in that regards, but yeah, it's, you know, anything with four wheels and any type of road racing situation. And that's where, you know, the other thing, to be honest, which it's again, a business side, but again, when back in the Utah, motorsports campus, or it used to be the Miller Motorsports Park, I was part of the initial team that actually started the racing school there with the Ford company there. And we kind of opened our doors. The very first school that for Larry Miller was back in 2007 when the track opened. And I basically went there as an instructor and then kind of morphed up to where after almost 12 years of being there, I was the director overseeing the school, and all the curriculum, all the hiring. That included the off-road school with the Raptors that we had at that point for about a 5 or 6 year tenure. I was overseeing the Yamaha School of Champions Motorcycle School. I oversaw all the Michelin training that we used to do in the desert and some, you know, for all the retail outlets for, you know, discount tire to tire rack, whatever it may be. So that, and I still lived in Portland and I commuted every week to Salt Lake City for over 12 years.
Wow.
And that again, and it wasn't until recently that the track sold was, you know, just a good opportunity for me to, I'm going to kind of bow out of this because it was, you know, taking its toll physically and mentally, you know, just being on the road 250 days a year is just not healthy. I don't care again what you say, it just kind of goes.
When you say commute, I hope you mean in an airplane or something like that.
Oh, absolutely. No. Yep. Yep. This is a 2-hour flight from Portland, you know, but again, being there that much. And so, you know, they tried to get me to move there, you know, very adamantly about after year 5. And I'm like, no, we're staying here in the Portland area. And because racing school business can be very up and down, you know what I'm trying to say? But
yeah,
we were very, very fortunate because the Ford program was so stable and we did a lot of the owner programs, you know, like when you buy like a Mustang, you know, you get a 2-day racing school with that. Well, that morphed into the Raptor program when people buy a Raptor truck. You know, we got it in the program and we were putting through, the numbers are staggering how many people would go through our programs. And it turned out to be 80% of our business were these owner programs. Again, where they go and buy an ST product, you know, their high performance division, versus 20% of the school was the racing. Now, you know, it's like, so the point I'm trying to make is our school was so busy. You know, I managed a fleet of over 100 vehicles. And that includes the road race cars, the off-road trucks, you know, everything. And yeah, let's just say that that was very, very educational. And plus I did all the negotiations with Ford, you know, with a team of a couple other gentlemen. Now we go back to Dearborn, you know, 3, 4, or 5 times a year, you know, and do all the contracts and stuff. And so the point is, it was, again, I was very fortunate, you know, I was very, one of the only very few females at that level, conducting everything. So again, I wrote all the curriculum, you know, for all the schools. I oversaw all the instructors, did the hiring, the firing, everything. And so, it was a busy part of my life. And then, during on the, you know, off the hours, you know, I was off racing for Dodge. And many people, you know, kind of, I shouldn't say many, but there were a lot of people kind of confused by that. You know, how can you be a factory driver for Dodge, but then you work for Ford, you know? And I'm like, no, that's exactly how it is. And both sides know that I don't divulge secrets. I don't, you know, talk about the others, and it's two separate parts of my life. But that was a real busy period in my life. I mean, real busy period. And, you know, it was good and bad. Let's just put it that way. But, you know, I'm very blessed to have that experience. You know, I'm very blessed to, you know, be the director of the Ford Racing School for all those years. But at least now we can kind of come up for air and get back to my roots a little bit more and see, is to do the high end coaching and so forth. And so, yeah, it's been a crazy life, you know, and I love it. I wouldn't trade it for the world.
I interviewed Lynn St. James a little while ago. And one of the points she made on that call was that she had, not the same, but she was, you know, running a business and racing professionally and doing all this at the same time. And that people used to be like, they'd find out like, oh, you're a race car driver on Saturday. No, I'm a pro, you know. Do you think that part of that comes to being in, you know, being a woman, that you have to essentially overachieve to achieve? Is there something in that?
Yeah, I see your point. And I think to a certain degree, yes. I think the biggest thing that I always preach to myself, and it, you better not talk about it. You better do it. And that means, you know, and so I don't want to be that person that sits in the paddock or sits around talking about racing. Well, I won this, or I was such a great driver, la, 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 la. And that's where I think, to be honest, probably a fault is I've have become modest over the years off the racetrack, because I just let the numbers on the piece of paper. I let my numbers on the racetrack, or, you know, when it comes to Saturday and Sunday, who goes home with the checker flag? That to me speaks louder than anything else. Now, on the other side of the coin, one of the biggest things as being female, and I was, you know, always so, I don't want to say concerned, but I was very adamant with the manufacturers and the people working on my cars. I said, listen, you know, unfortunately, I'm going to be held to a different standard. We can never, ever be caught cheating, because my career and my reputation will be absolutely destroyed, thinking the only reason I won is because I had a cheating car. And I'm very, very blessed over the years. I've never been busted for that. You know, we never had, you know, an issue. But that was just one of the things I was very, very, and I'm not saying it's done. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that others are out there cheating as well. But I'm just, there was no, I was never really going to push the gray area as much as others probably were, because I was just too concerned that it would destroy my career, reputation wise and stuff. But, you know, I think that, you know, it's like everything in life, you know, the car doesn't know the difference, male or female. You know, who's driving it and stuff. You just got to learn the meat and potatoes of driving and just suck it up and learn how to do it. Interesting enough, though, probably the two worst experiences, and it makes me laugh, but unfortunately it's, you know, I mean, probably the two worst situations after the race I've ever encountered, was from the wives of the men I just beat. Which, you know, it's weird. It's just like, but I think what it was, it's just, you know, but yeah, one was down at, you know, it was Long Beach at one of my races down there. And then there was another race back in, I think it was Atlanta. And yeah, anyway, it's a long story short, but yeah, the one of the wives just kind of came over, and thank goodness I had my helmet on, you know, it was just weird, you know, but anyway, but yeah, it's just, you know, she's just being protective of her husband. Maybe he was, I don't know, maybe he was just not a very nice person, you know, going home at night, you know, getting beat by a girl and taking out his wife. I don't know. But yeah, so that was probably my worst experience, actually, from the wives of a couple of drivers.
Sounds like one of those kids' soccer league horror stories, right? You know, my kid yeah. trips your kid yeah. and you want to fight, you know?
Yep, exactly. Exactly.
It's like, hey, the competition's on the track, not in the paddock, you know?
Yep. No, that is so very true.
So, we got to add to that we are talking because we're celebrating women in racing. And I know you're going out to the VSCDA Arians Art on Wheels. I got to get the title right. What are you looking forward to at the event in Road America?
You know, this is going to sound so weird, but I am just so excited just to cruise around and talk to people, you know, and meet some new people and celebrate the reason why we're all there, you know. It's just, you know, it's the love of the art of driving a race car, street car, race car, whatever that, you know, people are doing. But I'm just looking forward to, you know, it's kind of a new element for me. I really don't have a lot of history, you know, in the vintage world, but I'm looking forward to it because it's so new to me. That I'm just looking to meet new friends and new people and share my story, you know, with some folks and, you know, no, I mean, it's funny because legitimately I have got to run from Watkins Glen, which is our next race. And then we have some testing, and then we have testing on that Monday after the Road America. And it couldn't have fit in better time-wise, you know, for an event and stuff like that. So the stars definitely aligned for me to go participate in this thing, but I'm just looking forward to talking to everybody. And the cool thing about it, and this is what this whole movement is, and it's funny, I just got off the phone with Lynn yesterday on something else, and I said, I'm just excited that the world of motorsports is just not focused on just the driving aspect. You know, there's the engineers, there's the race officials, You know, there's the team owners, there are the marketing people, there are the, you know, I mean, there's so many roles and so many opportunities for females in the world of racing. And that's where I think it's just getting the limelight. And I'm just excited to be a part of it. You know, I think it's just going to be a lot of fun. And it's, in fact, I ran into somebody last weekend, and a person, they are driving out from Seattle to this event strictly because the celebration with women in motorsports. And I'm like, seriously? She says, nope. Me and my husband were corner workers, and, you know, we do an officiating every once in a while. But she says, I'm personally, you know, just been involved in motorsports, and I saw this what they're doing, and the people that are coming. She goes, I'm making it a weekend. I'm going to come out, and I'm not going to work, and I'm just going to attend all the evening functions and the talks and stuff like that and celebrate. I'm like, that's fantastic.
Yeah, I think it's very important, as you say, to point out that if you actually – get out and walk around the track, you are going to find a lot of women, literally the glue that holds things together. You know, in my job, I meet people in all corners of the track, and at most of those corners, there's a woman. Yeah, and this is a good point to make. It has nothing particularly to do with women, but for people that are looking to get involved, there are a lot of ways to get involved right at the nuts and bolts of this without going out and buying a race car.
And that's where I think the message is going to come across. Not necessarily maybe at this event, but in life, it's like, you don't need to put a helmet on. That's not the only way you can be active in motorsports. You know, there's so many other avenues. Yeah, no, I'm excited just to sit down and have a glass of wine and not worry about when you have to go out there and run and do data downloads and figure out chassis stuff. I'm just going to cruise around and talk to people. And I think it's going to be fantastic.
I'm sure it will. Are you doing an event with Lynn that's coming up in the near future?
I am. I think the big one that's coming up is the Women with Drive event that we're having in October in Charlotte. We're going to be doing there, and we're right now at 150 guests that have signed up, both male and female. But that's an event where basically anybody that has to do with motorsports, male or female, it's just kind of coming together. And we're going to have a whole panelist of speakers and activities and just kind of a pretty cool deal. And the sponsors are starting to come out pretty hardcore and strong and support this because they understand, you know, the movement is so strong right now. So it was just announced yesterday that Mobil 1 is coming on as the primary backer of this. And then pretty much at that point, you know, it definitely helps open up the floodgates, as to say, from a credibility standpoint and such. But yeah, no, that event is just going to be fantastic. It's the middle part of October. It's going to be based out of this the Charlotte, the Speedway there. And then we're going to be going over to Hendrick Motorsports. I'm going to be doing some discussions over there and so forth. And so it truly is going to be very enlightening, you know. And Jimmy Johnson is coming out as one of the keynote speakers, you know, and just male or female, you know, it's just a group coming together to discuss, you know, some of the obstacles we've run into in the current environment, what we can do to help, how we can get some of the young folks, you know, into this a little bit. And so, yeah, it's a pretty mega event. And so I sit kind of on the executive committee. There's about 9 of us. And then with that, we're not only busy with that, but I'm also helping out to some division per se. It's myself and Beth Perotta. I'm basically, I don't know if you know Beth, she has an IndyCar team running a limited schedule this year. Being the first IndyCar female owner of it all. But anyway, we've started a subcategory of a mentorship program. And basically we have this once a month, and we have candidates write in and you know, request to be mentored in some way, whether it be sprint car racing, road racing, drag racing, you know, engineering, whatever it may be. And then we match that person up with someone with experience. And so we have a lot of connections with Ganassi, a lot of connections with Todd McLaren, you know, I was on the phone the other day, actually, with Bobby Rahal and his whole organization, and talking to him about being a part of this mentorship program. And we do a Zoom call once a month, and it's open as we have the mediator and that one person. So it's kind of a little bit different, but it's actually, we've already had two, and it's actually pretty neat because we're finding that the amount of people just logging on, listening is growing at such a rate too. So it's kind of fun getting that part. So to answer your question, yeah, we're this group, basically Women in Motorsports North America. And it's not just a bunch of girls yakking about driving. It truly is executives, you know, wanting to give back, but also open the door, you know, help people have that career path a little bit better. As I always said, you know, the biggest thing that I learned going when I started out in motorsports is I had to get used to the word no. I had to get used to, you know, blowing off basically that word no. No, you can't do this, or no, I'm not going to help you, or whatnot. And you just have to keep swinging the baseball bat. You swing in the bat. You have to keep trying, never give up. And I think that, you know, we're in a position now where we just want to share our experiences and say, okay, this didn't work. You know, this, try this, you know, or here's the reason why this could work for you. So we're just trying to help navigate
for
them a little bit more strategically, you know, and not go through the same BS, some of the stuff that we had to go through and stuff. I mean, you know, yeah, regardless. I mean, that first 2 years of my driving career, I slept in my truck at the racetrack, you know, both Friday and Saturday night. I had no funds. I dug tires out of the dumpsters, you know. Same thing people are going to have to do today. But it's that will. If they're willing to do that, you know, that's the dedication that's necessary.
So let me dig out a few details there, because I'm sure we don't. Yeah, that's very exciting. This is a program which is open to women or to anybody. Is it,
correct.
Is it, okay, it's to anybody?
Anybody, or is it just, correct.
Okay, awesome.
Nope,
and
nope. Yep.
Where, if I'm listening to this and I think, hey, how do I find out about it? Where do I get some detail about it?
No, there's honestly, just go to the website, and the website is just, it's pretty simple. Women in Motorsports NA, North America.
Okay.
And just the website, and it's basically that. And Women in Motorsports North America. And this one, it's the summit coming up in October, and it's basically called Women with Drive. And this is the second summit. It's being held October 5th and 6th. Again, we're going to be based out of the Charlotte Motor Speedway. But again, registration is still open. You know, they can register. They got hotel information. They also have, which is really neat, and then depending upon, and I'm probably speaking, not, I don't want to say bad, but I'm not letting a cat out of the bag, but we do have a select amount of quote-unquote sponsorship, or for folks that may not be able to afford, you know, to attend or something like that, that we are able to work with some folks to get them in for free of charge as well. So, but it's going to be a neat thing. It really, really is. Male or female, and that's one of the things that I've always kind of said. I said we need to make sure, just because the title is Women in Motorsports, but the drive to succeed, you know, it's male or female. You know, I mean, we have John Noonan, you know, the president of the IMSA. He's coming there to speak. I mean, it's just, you know, it's kind of a who's who in the world of just motorsports. And so it's going to be great. There's no one's going to sell anything. No one's going to be there making pitches. It's just truly just what's going on, what's the state of the union per se of motorsports, whether it's current racing, vintage racing, circle track, whatever it may be. It's going to be very, very different. And so that's all I can really say. And I think the vibes and the chemistry that I'm getting so far, and I usually hate going to the, you know, the large gatherings and the SEMAs and the PRIs and stuff, you know, it's fun and stuff, but it's still, you know, being on your feet for 5 days kind of gets old. But this thing I'm really looking forward to, because I think it's going to have a social aspect, but also there's going to be a huge amount of connections and huge amount of social things. You just kind of get to know folks.
Yeah. I mean, it's honestly, you know, sitting in my seat, it sounds like a really attractive event, and certainly very exciting to be. I mean, one of the things that I think is really cool, having met you, well, in this forum anyway, met you and Lynn, is the fact that, you know, how do you get involved without a silver spoon in your mouth, right? And I mean, you laid that out very clearly a little while ago. You know, it's hard work and passion and, you know, accepting the word no and finding other resources, right?
Yep. That's exactly right.
You know, and I think this is something a lot of people, you know, they never get over that lump. So, you know, if you're listening to this and you'd like to meet Cindy or Lynn St. James, if you'd like to get some direct coaching in this matter, Women in Motorsports North America, and Women with Drive is the name of the summit. It's in October, and check it out. I know Lynn is going to be on the panel at the Arians Art on Wheels. Are you participating in the panel there?
I think they have me of everything, to be honest with you. Every time I turn around, I get an email that I've been asked this and that. So I said, if I'm there, you know, I'm doing stuff Friday morning, and I got a panel at lunch, and I got pace car rides, and I got two different dinners. And yeah, I mean, I'm like, if I'm there, keep me busy. So to answer your question, I do believe I'm involved in that panel as well.
Right. If you're there and you're walking around and you see Cindy, go up and say hi and introduce yourself. And,
no, for sure. And I would love that. And just if anybody has any questions too, you know, about motorsports or just automotive careers, you know, or just a question or so forth, if there's anything I can help with, they can always reach out to me. You know, there's social media, there's our website. There's plenty of ways that folks can get a hold of me. And I encourage that. And I promise I respond to everybody.
Well, Cindy, I appreciate your time. We've obviously gone beyond what you committed to here, and I realize
it's
been a long...
No, it's been nice. No, I'm just kind of sitting in the side room here with AC and watching the boys load up the cars, so I'm enjoying this.
It's the problem with talking to somebody with Irish roots is we keep the conversation going for too long, right? So
there's nothing wrong with that. Well, thank you so much.
You're obviously super easy to talk to, and I really appreciate that.
Nope, all is good. But no, I appreciate your time. If there's anything else that you need, definitely let me know. No, I'd love to help you guys out in any way I can. And it's always fun to meet new people. I enjoy it.
There you go. Super appreciate it and hope to talk to you again. Thank you so much.
Likewise. Well, thank you. Be in touch.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.